Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Before we get the podcast started, I wanted to jump in here real quick with some news that broke after we finished recording. On Sunday evening, J.P. Finley of NBC Sports Washington reported that Commanders rookie running back Brian Robinson had been shot multiple times in an attempted robbery. It was later revealed that this was a carjacking. Robinson's injuries are thankfully believed to be non-life-threatening, according to a variety of sources. Obviously, this is just a scary situation and horrible news for Brian Robinson, the man, as he was set to begin a life-changing chapter at the dawn of his rookie season. We send our thoughts and wishes for quick healing and a full recovery to Robinson, as well as the second victim who is reported to be involved in this situation. That's all we have for now. We'll keep you posted on any updates to this story as we get them.
Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast.
I like doing it. I love running routes.
We better be in Florida. It better be sunny. And there better be some sort of fruity drink involved.
With Matt Harmon.
It seems like you know ball the way you talk, so.
Thank you. Someone clip that.
Looking forward to facing your mom at some point.
Last night at the bar we were at, I had some really bad queso.
I've never had no bad queso, really.
It's Monday, August 29th. Oh, man, it's a big week for the podcast. I'm just going to say that right now. Can't quite get into full details about it just yet, but it's a big week for the show. And I will say this. I'm 100% done with preseason football. I'm ready for the regular season action to begin. But today, we do have to start off this big week tying a bow on the preseason, giving you our takeaways from week 3 of the preseason action, and joining me to do it, as always, here on the Sunday recap is Scott Pienowski. Scott, what's going on, buddy? How's it going?
It's going well. I'm glad the preseason's over. Really looking forward to the regular season. I'm sick of arguing with people about strategy and about branding and about flag planting. And I liked this player 3 months ago. Where were you? You know, let's get this thing going, man. Let's get these drafts on paper. Let's get these real games going and let's figure out who's good and who isn't.
Yeah, everybody that was sweating Treylon Burks was taking a victory lap when he ran in uncovered on a slant route against backups. So, yeah, I'm ready for that type of stuff to
right.
end.
Or how about Cole Kmet scoring against the Cleveland Browns defense that was clearly in their point shaving package because there was nobody within like 10 yards of Kmet. I see the point. I see the argument for Kmet. I mean, Jimmy Graham's gone and, you know, he's going to get a lot of targets. His touchdown count last year was unrealistically low. Where do you come off on Burks, by the way? I don't know if we've talked about him. He's been polarizing, obviously a first-round talent, a lot of vacated targets, a team I don't like very yeah. much. How are you treating him in draft season?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, we got to see him a little bit this weekend, and you know, he still seems like he's fourth on the wide receiver depth chart behind Robert Woods, behind Nick Westbrook-Ikhina, which, I mean, he'll move up ahead of him at some point. But Kyle Phillips, I keep, you know, talking about, that's kind of the biggest takeaway for me here is that Kyle Phillips is like going to be a part of this team. And I really can't see how like a legit, you know, somewhat legit target earner. Do I think Kyle Phillips is going to go out there and get like 90 to 100 targets? Probably not. But I don't really see how, if Phillips is a big part of this team as like a layup slot receiver, and I think his game and Ryan Tannehill's game really makes a lot of sense. I definitely think that they want a big presence like Burks. Obviously, they think that Burks is going to be the next AJ Brown. I don't think Treylon Burks has that type of skill set, at least right now. He needs to do a lot of developing as a route runner. I thought he would be more of like a big slot receiver type, Treylon Burks, but I don't really see how they're going to get him on the field in that type of alignment if Phillips is playing a role here. And I think the reality is that these guys, Robert Woods included, who I think is fine where he goes, and I'm not like going out of my way to draft Robert Woods, but I don't see how these guys can afford a third, you know, quote, mouth to feed in this offense. And like you and I have said many times, Scott, neither one of us is that jazzed on the Tennessee Titans offense this year.
Yeah, I ranked them 31st in my power rankings for fantasy purposes, and I got a little pushback, but not a ton of it. Is there a rookie receiver you're drafting into proactively in just a seasonal league?
Yeah, I think Drake London, I'm still drafting for sure where he goes. I mean, do I go into a draft thinking like, I got to draft Drake London? No, but if he's around in that range and he's, you know, coming up in my tiers, I totally like taking him. I actually, and this can transition us into the news because we have a report from Ian Rappaport that Saints left tackle Trevor Penning suffered what is believed to be a bad case of turf toe in the preseason finale against the Chargers. Because I think Chris Olave is a guy that I do want to draft proactively. I just love his game. At the same time, you know, Scott, I watched this Saints offense go up and down the field on the Chargers kind of backup, you know, defense there. This offense looked pretty good. It's preseason. I know you're not that jazzed about the Saints, and I think this Trevor Penning injury is something to keep in mind because I love to draft Chris Olave, but one of the things that you like about Olave is that his vertical route running, his explosiveness down the field does mesh really well with Jameis, where we have questions about, you know, Jarvis Landry, who looked pretty good in the preseason. How does he fit in with Jameis? What does he have left? Obviously, Michael Thomas, how does his game blend with Jameis Winston? But yeah, Chris Olave is the one rookie receiver that I do want to draft proactively and kind of the one guy on the Saints that I go into every draft thinking he's in a range where I really like taking him. Michael Thomas too, but you know, not as valuable. Like I think later on down the draft board, you can get Chris Olave. So that's kind of the one rookie receiver that I really like to draft this year.
Yeah, Olave for me too. I would have been in on Pickens before the hype get kind of out of control. I do think Pickens is going to be a great player someday. I just don't want to bet on that being 2022. I would think Olave's probably the Saint I'll probably have the most of when draft season is over, but that's only because I'm such hard fading Kamara and I'm hard fading Michael Thomas, and I really don't trust Winston. And I'm getting a lot of pushback on that. My life is going to be miserable if the Saints win the division and Jameis Winston is like in the MVP hunt, or, you know, there's a Pro Bowl season for Thomas or Kamara. I'm going to feel it, but that's okay. I mean, it's good that we disagree on this stuff. That's what the game is predicated on.
Right. But I do think this Trevor Penning injury is a big deal for the Saints. Like I thought about you immediately as I was watching this first team offense look really good. And I'm like, oh man, you know, I know Scott's like hard fading on the Saints. As you mentioned, it's not going to be great if these guys are good, but the offensive line is one of the things we've talked about before, that there's some volatility to this unit. You know, they're obviously trading out Teron Armstead, who's been injury prone, but been really good when he's been in there. And Trevor Penning is kind of a developmental guy who it plays really aggressively. You know, he's like gotten kicked out of practice for fighting this offseason, but you know, they need him to come in and hit the ground running. You know, otherwise they're going to be looking at like James Hurst or something like that as their starting left tackle. And that can bring down the entire infrastructure of the offense, I think.
Well said. Well said. Again, let's bring on the real games, man. They did look sharp, and I admit I felt some pangs seeing them, as you said, matriculating the ball up and down the field, but against the backup defense, we'll see what happens on, you know, second week of September.
Well, the real games aren't starting, but we do know who's going to be starting the first real game for the Seattle Seahawks. Geno Smith has been officially named the week one starter. I mean, if there was any question left, and frankly, I think it was going to be Geno, Drew Lock kind of slammed the door shut on himself when he threw three interceptions against the Cowboys. I mean, my God, he just went out in the most like Drew Lock fashion possible. Pete Carroll, like you said, he still thinks they've got two number one quarterbacks. That's hilarious. I think both these guys play at different points of the year, but we are going to get Geno to start the season. And I think that's probably what you wanted if for whatever reason you were proactively drafting DK Metcalf or, you know, taking the value on Tyler Lockett.
For sure. You know, Metcalf actually had reasonable production with Smith last year. And it's the devil, you know, it's the guy, it's the continuity play. It's the guy who's already been in the building. And I love our friend Ian Hartitz, who had, I thought the tweet of the preseason, I have to clean it up a little bit, but he says, you know, Drew Lock just says F it before every throw, you know, and it's, yeah. That's exactly that. I can't, when you see a tweet like that, you just wish you had thought of it. You know, it perfectly and succinctly sums up the Drew Lock experience. Although I give you also medalist honors for talking about him slamming the car door on himself, which is fantastic. And I love also that Pete Carroll, we live at a time where when the coaches go to the presser, it's always like, oh, you know, everybody competed. We get a look at the film. I'll come back to you in a couple of days. He just said after the game, Gino's our starter. I mean, nothing left to hide behind. You know, okay, the verdict is in. We're not going to sleep on it. We're not going to think about it. We don't need 2 hours to deliberate. It's Gino. But maybe can we talk ourselves into DK Metcalf? Because, again, they had some moments. If Gino riffed with anybody last year, I know Laka had one monster game against Jacksonville, kind of invisible in the other Gino games. Can we squint and say, oh, maybe this is good for DK Metcalf?
Well, I think the good thing about both the Seattle Seahawks receivers is that the target tree remains super narrow here. I mean, even Noah Fant, who they, I don't want to say they traded for, he was basically part of like the, as was Drew Lock, part of the bring back to send Russell Wilson to Denver, not really consequential pieces there. You know, he's been playing behind or like sharing tight end snaps with frickin' Will Disley this preseason. Like, I don't think that he's going to be a major target earner here. So
they love Will Disley, man. They love themselves some Will Disley. They want to, you know, I know Julio Rodriguez signed the like lifetime extension with the Mariners. I'm surprised the Seahawks haven't done that with Will Disley because they really want to.
I mean, man, pretty close. Like they signed him to a pretty big deal to bring him back there, which was crazy because he's coming off of, you know, pretty decent injury here too. So yeah, I think, look, there have been some times where Metcalf has fallen into like the Rashad Bateman, Elijah Moore zone of the draft. And, you know, obviously I want to draft those guys, Elijah Moore, and Rashad Bateman.
Second year receivers. That's your brand right there.
100%. But when Metcalf gets in there, I'm like, look, there are some times where you got to take the plunge there with Metcalf at this point. And Lockett, I maintain, goes way, way, way too late. I mean, every single draft I'm in, he's around like round 9, 10, 11 sometimes. If it's a super, honestly, like the more analyst heavy or writer heavy a league is, the farther Lockett falls, which I think is kind of crazy. So I still maintain that these guys are falling too far, but just because of how narrow the target tree is there.
That's a great point that, you know, there are certain biases that your league has. We talk about a lot, not just us, but in the Twitter discussions. Yeah, you know, how do you beat your home league? What is the bias to your home league? And home league is just shorthand for a league of a little bit less sophistication, a league where people might be drafting out of a magazine, or people might just be trying to collect some information right, you know, right before the day of the draft. They haven't been grinding every news item or every tweet or even the preseason action. But what are the biases if you play in a quote-unquote sharper league, a quote-unquote industry league, a quote-unquote, you know, high-stakes league? What are their biases? And you're right. A guy like Tyler Lockett can become yesterday's news. And in a league like that, you know, where I'm maybe going to take the buy the dip on Lockett or just take him when the rest of the room doesn't want him. Or I might go into a player for me that's become like in the hipster rooms. I'm not taking Trey Lance because somebody in my room wants to run in and plant a flag and beat his chest on Trey Lance. That person is probably named Dalton Del Don, but there's other people like him. And look, I get it. I mean, look, Lamar Jackson exploded year two. Patrick Mahomes exploded year two. Those guys had some experience. You know, they played a lot in college. You know, Jackson won a Heisman Trophy. Mahomes had a couple of pinball years with Kingsbury doing that thing. I mean, Trey Lance the last 4 years has thrown fewer than 400 passes. He's still a guy on spec. I get it. He's talented. He went third in the draft. Shanahan handpicked him. Shanahan's a great coach. They have unbelievable skill talent around him. And of course, the Konami code. He's going to run a lot. He doesn't necessarily even need to be a great passer to be a great fantasy player. We saw that with Jalen Hurts last year. Mediocre passer. He averaged a touchdown a game for crying out loud through the air, but he ran so much, he still was a really good fantasy player. But so in a home league, I get it. Like Trey Lance is probably, you know, Davis Maddock was saying today, well, you can take Trey Lance, and even if he stinks, you know, the fallback is so cushy that it doesn't even matter. And I think that's true in a quote-unquote home league. In a quote-unquote hipster league, analyst league, we know what we're doing league, I think Trey Lance is likely to be overpriced.
Yeah, that's a great point. There's the differences. I think Dwayne McFarland from PFF actually had a pretty good thread this weekend about like the difference in, you know, kind of the you know, casual league type of, I think he's like Fantasy Pros consensus ADP versus sure. like a high stakes league ADP. And I think that is really interesting stuff, just how, especially because people that are playing in high stakes leagues or, you know, a bunch of writers, stuff like that, they've been hearing these same narratives just beat in their head over and over again. You know, meanwhile, I've said some of my buddies who play like casually, they're like, oh, I didn't even realize this guy's on this team, you know, at this point. So that's because congrats to them. They have real lives. I wanted to run this by you, Scott. Pro Football Talk's Mike Florio reports that, quote, rumors are making the rounds that Raiders tight end Darren Waller will be hiring Drew Rosenhaus as his new agent. I wanted to bring this up because on the last episode with Frank, we talked about Darren Waller as a little concerning that he had missed time with an injury through a lot of training camp. I'm also now kind of thinking if it's like a little bit of a hold in type of situation, like he clearly wants a new contract. And when you look at his contract, he absolutely deserves it. Like, he's been a really good player and he's extremely underpaid. But at the same time, it's interesting that this new Raiders staff hasn't run out and like given him a new deal while he also might be banged up. Is Darren Waller a green light, yellow light, red light pick for you as kind of, in my opinion, like the last of the potential elite tight ends on the draft boards this year?
Yeah, I'm probably not taking him where he goes. I'd rather just go to the next tier and maybe take a Dalton Schultz or take a Dallas Goedert or somebody like that. I'm just concerned that even though I don't think the Raiders have a very wide tree, and I think they're going to have a lot of trouble actually running the ball with that offensive line, I still think Waller might be third in targets. Adams is going to soak up targets off the bus. And I think Hunter Renfrow is a guy who a lot of people don't respect that much. I think he's a really good player, and he fits what Derek Carr likes to do, what Josh McDaniels likes to do. So Waller is certainly not going to be mothballed, but I think it's going to be a lot of games where he's the third option. Plus, he's getting to an age where I get nervous about a pass catcher, and he's got the injury concerns. Although he's playing softball, though, so you know, you can pick him up. You can keep him in your softball dynasty leagues, I guess. But I like the value. I think there are guys who could be Waller equivalents who go a tier later. I'm more likely to dip into that market.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he's the third guy here. Wouldn't be surprised if he has a big season. I feel like the range of outcomes are really wide. And he's a guy that I bet in, you know, these high stakes leagues, I would imagine that his ADP is slightly lower than in, you know, typical redraft leagues, where, although he is coming off an injury kind of messed up season last year where he had that one monster week one game where he got like 19 targets or something and then never saw that type of usage again. So I don't know. He's definitely going to be an interesting guy.
Who are your most drafted tight ends, would you say? Do you have them off the top of your head?
Probably Dawson Knox. I think it's Dawson Knox, because I think he goes as the last guy before I think it really drops off, because I think things drop off for me. It's tight end 9, and that's, I actually have Dawson Knox at 8 and TJ Hockenson at 9, because I think the ceiling on Knox is a little bit higher just from a touchdown perspective, just from an overall offensive perspective. So for me, I typically end up, someone takes Hockenson ahead of Knox, and then I take Knox as the last guy before it falls off to like tight end 10. I've got David Njoku, 11, like Zach Ertz. And Njoku, we've talked about him as a guy that I'm higher than consensus on. He's played a ton in the preseason, like 80% of the dropbacks with the first team offense. I think he's got a decent shot too if I don't get one of those top 9 tight ends. But yeah, for me, I think it's ended up being Dawson Knox. What about you?
No, I like the way you've tied it to Hockenson too, where you know the Hockenson pick signals that it's getting close to your to go time for Knox. It's nice when you can tie two players together so you know how to read. That's how you read the market, right?
Yeah,
makes a lot of sense. I won't talk too much about him now because we're doing the Cowboys later, but I actually have a lot of Schultz, and we'll talk about him a little bit later. You know, I do like Njoku in any league that has tight end premium scoring or something like that. He'd be somebody I'd be proactive about. I just wish they had a little bit more a quarterback. Expectations for Brissett are so low, but then again, their wide receiver room is Amari Cooper and a bunch of ordinary guys. I realize Donovan Peoples-Jones will make a big play every 3 or 4 games, but I don't like their wide receivers. I'm really down on Cooper too. So I've lost money on Njoku in the past, so I want to be transparent about that, but I still want to draft him semi-proactively. He's kind of like a yellow plus for me. I do have a lot of Schultz too. I'm trying to think who else I have. I'm not taking any of the vanity guys, although I'm really worried that I'm going to regret not taking Kyle Pitts.
Yeah, I feel kind of the same way about Kyle Pitts, but we shall see. A couple injury things to wrap up with here before we kind of go into a few more preseason nugs. Ty Montgomery suffers an ankle injury. Not sure about the severity. I know you talk about like a hipster guy or whatever. It's like, well, Ty Montgomery might mix into this Patriots backfield or whatever, but kind of sounds like Damian Harris, who that's a guy that just falls and falls and falls in any sort of like analyst league or whatever. I was in a draft on Friday night and he went behind Ramondre Stevenson, which I still feel like is not correct. But I have those guys like a tier apart for me, and I like taking Ramondre Stevenson, but I'm taking Damian Harris ahead of him pretty much every single time. Still to this point, I think he went like outside the top 30 running back. So I took Damian Harris there as kind of my RB2 at that point, because I was more wide receiver heavy and tight end heavy, quarterback heavy, stuff like that. So keep an eye on the Ty Montgomery thing. Also, Jacoby Myers sounds like he's solidified as the number two, maybe number one receiver for Mac Jones. Jacoby Myers, man, I think I said it on a couple episodes ago. He's like fantasy cockroach. He just survives everybody else they bring in to that wide receiver room. But he did suffer, was seen on like the exercise bike on the sideline. So keep an eye on his injury status too. And then Tyrod Taylor, just this morning during the Jets-Giants preseason game, was carted off with a back injury. And I feel like Tyrod's getting some playing time this year for the New York Giants. So keep an eye on all those. Any reaction to any of those three players? Not like big news, but, you know, we'll see what the status of all of them are.
Yeah, you know, I like your take on Harris. You know, the idea, again, the smarter your room is, the more people... It's not just that they don't want to draft him. They feel like drafting him is some admission of a frail, human frailty. You know, it's like this organized collusion that we're not going to be the sucker on Damian Harris. So you're going to get a ridiculous discount if you're with a bunch of other smart people, where in the more common league, it's going to be like, oh, wait a minute, he scored how many touchdowns last year? He's on the Patriots, who live in the red zone. Generally, it's a boring offense, though, that I've tried to avoid. I see the case for Myers, because you would think he would normalize to maybe five or six touchdowns. His touchdown rate has been so low. But Mac Jones is... If he's above league average, it's really, really slight. I think this team is going to have trouble getting off the ground. The time to play the Patriots is early in the season. I think eventually Belichick's such a good coach, he'll figure it out. And some combination of Joe Judge and Matt Patricia, I guess, will figure it out, although it's really hard to trust those guys. But the Patriots are one of my least appealing fantasy destinations in draft season.
All right, a few other preseason takeaways here. I mean, I think we can touch on Damian Pierce really quickly, talk about a guy that's going to have, you know, a gigantic gap between where he goes in casual leagues and people that are paying attention. I was advising a buddy in, you know, a draft recently, and he was saying Damian Pierce is ranked like 130 overall on this platform's site. Should I really be taking him here in like the eighth round range? Like, yes, you need to just go ahead and take him there. And then I was in a draft on Friday with some, quote, you know, sharper folks, and he went in the freaking fifth round. So there's going to be a big gap there. What is the right answer in terms of Damian Pierce, who finishes preseason with 6.2 yards per carry, and Marlon Mack's roster spot looks somewhat questionable right now, just because he played a deep into the preseason game against the 49ers.
If you're in a casual league, target round 8, maybe round 7, if it seems to fit your roster build. If you're in a quote-unquote sharper league, round 6 looks good. And as I said to Frank Schwab, who took Pierce recently in the fifth round, I said, well, he's like kind of like a break glass in emergency fifth round pick. So again, I'll sign off on fifth round pick in case of emergency, hipster league. Otherwise, round 6. And backdate that to 7 and 8 if you're in more casual league.
Yeah, I feel like that's the right answer. So look, he probably projects for 200, 220 touches this year. And we'll see if he can wrestle passing down work away from Rex Burkhead. You know, and Rex Burkhead doesn't really move the needle at this point, but he can probably get the job done or whatever. So if he could take that, if he could take those duties away from Rex, I think then we're cooking as like a potential high-end RB2.
And their line, I think, is going to be at least adequate, if not maybe even a plus. And I would say that Damian Pierce goes down as the biggest winner of the summer. He's the guy who, if all you've done is you bought a magazine on your June or July vacation and you've basically taken the last 6 weeks off and now you're tuning into us into this big, exciting week. I'm not even sure what your surprise is. I can't wait to hear about that. I'm going to have to ask you after we finish taping. But this is the guy who moved the most. This is the guy who's misranked from that magazine, who you need to adjust the most.
Yeah, man. It's exciting. I think that... Listen, by the way, shout out to you folks. If you're out there enjoying your vacation, that's good for you. But yeah, I agree with you. The biggest takeaway is that Damian Pierce is now like the guy to draft in those mid rounds. Moving on to the next one here. Tom Brady completed 6 of 8 passes for 44 yards in Saturday's preseason finale against the Colts. He also touched on his 11-day absence. Scott, last night we had in town the El Segundo Art Walk, which is an awesome event down here every single year. Basically, you're just like going around to all the local businesses and having a few beers along the way, purchasing some local art. One of the last stops we took was at the great spot near where we live, Richmond Bar and Grill. And so, you know, I had a couple drinks by then, and they had the recap of this preseason game up, and I saw Tom Brady at the podium. I'm like, oh, I know what he was doing during those 11 days away. He was getting like some more lip filler in there. My God, the guy's face looks like he's definitely got some work done. So I'll just say that here. And I had enough drinks to say that out loud last night, but now I just said it out loud here, so I don't really know what I'm talking about at this point. But anyways, Tom Brady's back with the Bucks. And it seems like all is well. Russell Gage has yet to resume practicing. Julio Jones is catching some long passes. Leonard Fournette's like taking every single running back snap with the first team offense. It feels like we're kind of back in business here with the Bucks. And if we were worried at all about Tom Brady's absence, he got his work done, and he's back on the team now.
Yeah, I'm fine to draft Brady where he goes. I think Mike Evans, late second, early third is perfectly fine. Lenny, we've had a good time since he's been in Tampa Bay. He's in the Brady circle of trust.
Oh, yeah.
I think he's a very safe pick, and I think they'll figure out the offensive line. I realize there are concerns. There's been guys they lost, including Gronkowski, who's a very good blocker, but I think they'll figure it out. And I agree with you on Brady, by the way. Just looking at the podium, it's just a little bit uncomfortable for me. Yeah. Let me ask you about the controversial Chris Godwin. People from other fantasy sites have called out Yahoo for not having Chris Godwin ranked highly enough. And I just told some of you guys on a private email thread that I'm not going to let the Twitter mob change my opinion of where to draft Chris Godwin. What say you, Matt Harmon?
The woke Chris Godwin mob will not.
Yes, it's coming for us. It's coming for Yahoo, man. It's coming for us.
Well, they will not. They will not take down Scott Pienowski. Listen, I've had Chris Godwin kind of buried all off season, and I know he's going to play early, right? Like, I think he's going to get out there. And he's going to play earlier than I expected probably 2 or 3 months ago. But at the same time, I don't really want to draft a guy that I kind of have to stash for the first 3 weeks. We'll see. Like, the reality is with some of these guys, J.K. Dobbins is another one that they could get past the initial roster cut and then put them on IR. Like, that's possible. And then they miss the first 3 weeks. Like, Mike Davis playing every single first down and second down snap with the Ravens on the first drive. Like, that might be a signal that they're trying to ramp him up. So you got to keep that in mind. With Chris Godwin, I don't know, man. I just always, unless he falls. And I actually really haven't been, and maybe I haven't done enough drafts on Yahoo where we've got him buried, allegedly. I haven't been in a draft where Chris Godwin goes in a range that I think the risk is priced in a little bit. He's probably somebody that I would like to, this might be crutch analysis, but he's somebody I would rather acquire like after the draft, like a few weeks into the regular season, rather than be the one to draft and stash him and sort of see what happens. Because I loved drafting Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. And I still like drafting Mike Evans, but I'm talking about back when they were the only two guys in town. It's not that way at all, especially with Russell Gage and Julio Jones looking pretty good in this offense right now.
And one of my big concepts is I think September is an underrated part of fantasy football. Just thought in the idea that all these ideas, oh, I'm going to, what's the playoff schedule? And I'm going to crush in December. And I want to be 3-0. I want to be 4-1. Yeah. I want to be somebody. I did a really brief thread on bye weeks on Twitter today, on we're taping on Sunday, and talked about how bye week season, week six, that's when trading season starts. That's when the standings have a little bit of personality to them. It's like, okay, we've got 5 games in the bank. Are you 4-1? And can you go pick off players from panicky bye week managers? Or are you one of the teams that's 1-4 and you have some really key guys who aren't playing in week six? And now maybe you have to think about trading out of that because you need to win right away. I want leverage, and leverage comes from having a team that you can play early in the season. I was not one of the guys, and I realize it's really convenient for me to pick out Michael Thomas, but I was not one of the guys who said, oh, draft Michael Thomas last year and you'll have this, you know, wide receiver one in the middle of the season. I just never looked at it that way. I realize this is apples and oranges with him and Godwin, because maybe Godwin can't contribute early, but I think you're going to have guys get hurt anyway. Injuries are going to find you. I don't like to draft into injuries unless I get a really nice discount. And some people will say, hey, wait, at Yahoo, you're getting that great Godwin discount. So I'll be open, try to be open-minded to that. But I don't want to draft him where I would normally draft a wide receiver starter. I would only be comfortable drafting Godwin when he was ostensibly a bench player for me. And if that means I'm underweight or even out of the Godwin business this year, I can totally live with that.
Yeah, I mean, just in my rankings, like, I've got him. I mean, I do definitely have him pretty buried for sure. But I don't want to be taking him in the same range where guys like Amon-Ra St. Brown go, Rashad Bateman, Elijah Moore, Jerry Jeudy, Brandon Ayuk, Gabe Davis, Darnell Mooney, even Michael Thomas, who's at least going to roll out there in week one. Like, we think, I mean, he does have a hamstring injury, but, you know, those guys we're going to get the answer on real quickly. Now I am looking at my ranks.
I have to jump in here and say this. One of the sites that was calling us out for Godwin being misranked, I believe their ADP has St. Brown like 40 or 50 slots below Godwin. I think that's absurd. Please take the sun god, especially if you're getting that kind of a discount, man.
Yeah, I am sitting here looking at my rankings thinking Chris Godwin or Amari Cooper, like, I know the best is probably at the end of the season for Amari Cooper. The best is probably at the end of the season for Chris Godwin. And I don't know. I like Chris Godwin better as a player. So that is one I got to think. I got to think about that one. So maybe I can get him from 94th overall or whatever we've got him to, like, 91st. I don't know.
So how low was Godwin for you receiver wise? 35, 30, 40? Where is he?
Initially, I had him 38. Okay. I think he's got to be. I think 33, 34 is kind of the range for him. Like, would you rather have Adam Thielen or Chris Godwin?
Thielen.
Same. Yeah. And I've got Thielen 33. I've got Hunter Renfro 35, Tyler Lockett 36, like Christian Kirk 37.
By the way, get Vikings, man. I want you to have at least one Viking on your team. They had a coach who hated their quarterback. That coach is gone. They have a modern offensive guy who came from the womb of Sean McVay. And I realize that, look, Sean McVay 2.0 may just not be out there, but the point is, that team, that kitchen needed to be repainted and remodeled so badly, and they finally remodeled it. Justin Jefferson is one of the most talented guys in the league. Thielen is so good in space. Maybe this is a year Irv Smith is healthy if you want to take a flyer at tight end. You know, Cook's certainly a very easy guy to draft. I think they're a great bet to win the division, too. They're, last I checked, plus 225, plus 230, something like that. I mean, Chicago's not going to be good. Detroit's a cute little team, but they're probably going to be 7-10 cute. And I can talk myself at least out of the Packers. I know they have a good defense, but look at that wide receiver room. I think Minnesota is a great fantasy value and a great futures market value, too. Even their win total, I thought, was just 9.5 last I checked. I feel very confident they'll get the double-digit wins, and they have a fairly manageable schedule. Most of it is actually the heavier games are early. You'll have to wait for the schedule to get a little bit softer. And as I said earlier, I mean, who knows with the Snow Globe League, maybe that those games will be more difficult. But I'm very proactive, very green light on the Vikings for 22.
Yeah, me too. I love that take. I love Adam Thielen as a guy that, man, I've gotten the discount on him a few times, and it feels really good. Like, outside the top 30 receivers, unless he's completely cooked, I don't think he's completely cooked. You're probably getting a nice discount there with Adam Thielen in this offense. KJ Osborne's a decent late round pick. And just to bring it back to Chris Godwin, I mean, listen, everybody can have an opinion, whatever, it's fine. I just think that I want to take those potential breakout guys ahead of a guy that has a lot of questions. And I love Chris Godwin. I think he is definitely in the reception perception penthouse. No question about it, Chris Godwin. Like, but I don't know that I want to be taking him this year. Let me take him in 2023, pretty much is kind of my analysis on him. Great player. I just want to take some of those breakout bets a little bit ahead of him. All right, that was a lot of topics all at once. So Scott and I are going to take a quick break, regroup ourselves, and when we come back, we'll talk a few young quarterbacks that performed pretty well over the weekend.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
All right, Scott, Justin Fields, with the caveat that you said, like, preseason, the Browns, you know, might have been not playing their most in-depth coverage look, stuff like that. I will say Justin Fields, 14 of 16 for 156 yards, 3 touchdowns in the Bears preseason finale against those Cleveland Browns. The one thing I'll say that I was really encouraged by, not necessarily with just Fields himself, the line looked a little bit better. Like we said, you know, preseason defenses, whatever. And I really think they got him on the move, man. Like, that was the type of offense I wanted to see Justin Fields playing in, the preseason offense that we saw him in. That is encouraging for a guy that I think you have to have legit questions about coming out of his rookie year. Like, I'm not closing the book on Justin Fields, anything like that, but there were a lot of rocky moments. And it looks like in this offensive system, which we know Luke Getsy, the play caller coming from Green Bay, probably a better fit for him here in year two.
Yeah, I've been talking a lot the last week or two about teams that finally have an adult in the room, and Jacksonville comes to mind really quickly. The Giants come to mind. But what if the Bears, even if just getting Matt Nagy out of there, what if that's a win, no matter how good the new coaching is? And as you said, it was encouraging to see Fields on the move. And I know people will say, well, you roll out your quarterback, you're cutting the field in half. But you also get the defense kind of in hyperspace mode, and sometimes it leads the guys wide open. Fields is a very athletic kid.
Yeah.
And he's somebody who I don't think you can draft him to be your starting quarterback, but if you're in any kind of a format where everybody drops a backup, or if you're in a league where you play multiple guys, he's kind of like the arbitrage Trey Lance. I get it. He doesn't have Debo Samuel. He doesn't have George Kittle. He doesn't have Kyle Shanahan. But he has the athletic profile. He has the draft pedigree. I can tell myself a story that maybe Fields, because of his running ability, will be able to outkick what his fantasy quarterback ranking would be. And end the season, you tell me the end of the season, he's like quarterback 11, quarterback 12, quarterback 13. I think it's perfectly reasonable in his range of outcomes. And I want to draft Mooney. I want to draft Kmet. So I'm excited about this, man. That was easily the biggest takeaway from week three, was that Justin Fields finally showed something. And I think maybe he's in an offense where he feels some also year two, common year for breakouts. Maybe he's just, he knows where everything is. He's been around the block once. I think there's a decent chance that even though the Bears won't be good, I think Justin Fields might be good in 2022.
Yeah, I agree with you. Really encouraging. We talked about Pete Carroll up at the top and how Pete's a pro. He went out there and was just like, we don't need to look at the film. Like, Geno Smith is the starter after Drew Lock throws three picks. Matt Nagy always up there after the game, like, we got to find the why to why we lost. I got a few guesses, Matt. Okay. I agree with you. Like, getting an adult in the room here is key, because Fields was just set up to fail in that offense last year. There's no doubt. Like, when you watch it, that like Fields too, you talk about him as an athletic guy. He is super athletic. He's also like a big game hunter. Like, he wants to throw the ball down the field. And that was such like a slant, curl, flat route offense last year. Man, I think you're going to make some big plays. They're not going to sustain drives. There's going to be some rocky moments. I mean, Equanimeous St. Brown looks like he's the locked in number two on this team. Not what you want to see from a wide receiver perspective. But Cole Kmet, Darnell Mooney, even David Montgomery, like, dominated a first team snaps in this game against the Browns, which I've been pretty out and pretty harsh on David Montgomery the last few episodes. That did at least make me raise an eyebrow that maybe he, like Andy and I have said, he needs to dominate first team snaps, David Montgomery, to have fantasy value on this offense. But Cole Kmet and Darnell Mooney, I definitely think are big winners. Kmet did play less than 70% of Chicago's offensive snaps for the first four drives in this game. That's worth noting, but I have moved Kmet up my tight end rankings of late as well.
Yep. Draft Cole Kmet. I'm going to leave it as simple as that.
Yeah, I agree with you. This next one here, Tua completes 6 of 7 passes for 120 yards and a touchdown in Saturday's preseason finale against the Eagles. Hey, there's no guy, let's just get the game started than Tua, right? For me, he throws a deep pass to Tyreek Hill, and it's just like the most picked apart pass of all time. Any Tua deep pass is going to, like, the Tuanon crowd is going to be all in on everything he does that looks pretty good. The anti-Tua folks are going to have their opinions. I just kind of want to see how this plays out with Tua, but everybody seems pretty excited in Miami. And I do think there is some upside here in the range of outcomes where this offense with Tyreek Hill, and if Tua takes another step, and Jalen Waddle's, he's not been healthy this offseason, but he's out there playing well, where they look pretty good. I don't know. There is definitely a positive in the range of outcomes here for this team.
You're so right about that deep pass to Hill, where it's like the Tua detractors are like, that should have been a touchdown. It was underthrown. What's he throwing a 50-yard curl route for? And then the pro Tua people are like, man, the pro Tua people are like, he's so unfairly criticized. Even when he makes a big play, people are ripping it apart. Let's get the games going. And we talked earlier about the differences between industry, hipster leagues, whatever you want to call them, and the more casual leagues. I think a player who underscores that gap and sees in the taste what your league is like is Chase Edmonds, where I think a lot of industry people love Edmonds. I think in the casual leagues, you're going to steal him as maybe even a bench player, and he may end up being like a very solid starter for you, where you have to kind of elbow people out of the way in industry leagues because he's become a destination for a lot of us. You know, he got paid. He's better than the other guys they have. They're going to prioritize him. Again, I'm going to give you a green light on Chase Edmonds. And as far as the passing game, just get me to week one.
Yeah, 100%. Chase Edmonds is a really good call out. Like I said, I was just in a draft this weekend and I tried to kick it down the can from, you know, he was there in the seventh round was Chase Edmonds. And I was like, I really want to take Rashad Bateman here. You know, I'm going to do it and I'm going to try to get one more round of a discount on Chase Edmonds and ended up having to go to Tony Pollard after someone took him like two picks ahead of me. Actually, I think it
wasn't wrong with that. I mean, you had to get Bateman for the year two and the narrow tree there and the way they're set up. I mean, it's at the point where they're hoping their third pass catcher in Baltimore might be a backup tight end, right? Or a second tight end, a rookie second tight end at that, Isaiah Likely. So they have nothing after Bateman at wide receiver. So I don't blame you for, I mean, I say nothing, you know, Devin Duvernay and James Prochet. I mean, they should be third or fourth or fifth receivers on any regular team. The Ravens are obviously a knuckleball offense, but I would have told you, even feeling as Edmonds as I am, and maybe not quite being as excited about Bateman as you are, I still would have said that Bateman's the right pick in that spot.
Well, that makes me feel a little bit better because, yeah, I was kind of, I mean, I like Chase Edmonds a lot and I was bummed and I was definitely stronger at wide receiver in that draft than running back, but I felt all right about taking Tony Pollard as my
RB3. Do you find, because of what reception perception is that, I mean, are you more likely to draft proactively at receiver? Do you feel like receivers are the strength of your team? How does that affect your fantasy application?
It's a great question because I think that I've heard folks say like, well, you should be able to just basically pass up wide receivers and like try to, you know, get discounts on guys you think are better than the market, right? Like, you know, take a few guys as late round flyers that might end up being starters or whatever. So maybe go running back heavy, but I do end up being wide receiver heavy in drafts for sure. I also just think it totally depends on format, right? Like in this specific one that I was doing, you could start three wide receivers, full PPR. Also had a lot of weird scoring things going on there. So not sure this is like the best application, but I do end up being more wide receiver heavy, not full on. Like I'm not a zero RB guy. I do want to have at least one really, really good running back. So yeah, I think that it kind of goes back and forth, but I love wide receivers and I typically have to kind of like stop myself, like set myself on the hand and be like, stop taking so many wide receivers. Like you don't need any more of these guys. I know you love this guy and this guy and this guy, but enough already. At some point you got to take Chase Edmonds. You got to take Tony Pollard.
But I'm glad you're still getting some stake at the top of your draft, that you're not closing yourself. You're not saying, well, I feel so good about the ability to mine some of these guys in the middle of my draft or later in my draft. You still need some lead singers. You still need some entrees. You can't live on appetizers.
I mean, and the reality too is, Scott, that there have been guys like Tyler Lockett's a great example. I think, you know, Curtis Samuel, another example. And I think Brandon Ayuk is going to be one of those guys too, where sometimes the talent is there, but the situation is not. And that's why I don't want to be so like, oh, I know I'm smart. Don't ever go into the draft being like, I know I'm smarter than everybody else. I mean, I think I got a good handle on wide receiver talent, but fantasy is still about projecting situations and opportunity and stuff like that. And chaos can always rule. So if I go into a draft saying like, yeah, I can live off appetizers at the wide receiver position because I'm that good at like being able to spot those values, I'm going to get banged a lot of times. So definitely go in with some humility and, you know, take Cooper Kupp at pick 7 when he's there, man, because, you know, you can still get that good main entree in on your diet and feel pretty good about it.
You need some steak. You absolutely need some steak on your roster for sure.
100%. Couple other minor notes here before we transition to the Cowboys. BCU's finest, Scott. I think it's happening with Mo Alie-Cox. Ran a route on 75% of Matt Ryan's dropbacks this preseason. Took every snap with the first team offense in the most recent game. Another note here, KJ Hamler caught 3 of 5 targets for 18 yards in the Broncos preseason finale. Really good to see him out there. Lined up out wide 18 times compared to 7 in the slot. I think they'd kind of need him as a speed slot receiver guy, but was good to see him in 2 receiver sets. And Albert O was among the Broncos who did not play in that game, which was good to see after the most recent preseason game before that. He played deep into it, and the coaching staff said he, quote, needed reps. So those are 2 tight ends. You asked me who I've been drafting a lot. Like, after the top 8 guys, I like Albert O, although I've been kind of banging him down the rankings a little bit. And I mean, Mo Alie-Cox, man, I'm in the bag for Mo Alie-Cox at this point too.
Yeah, I am too. Although, you know, he's like a last round target for me,
yes. Or
maybe even like a waiver pickup after you stash people on IR, that type of thing. I'm glad you brought up Albert O, because 3 or 4 weeks ago, if it was like who outside the top 12 of the position could really significantly, dramatically leap, Albert O would have been the first guy I mentioned. He's got this athletic profile. They got Russell Wilson. And then all the news flowed against him, other than the Patrick injury, which would have helped him maybe just move up the target tree. But and then we had to be concerned, you know, with teams changing how they handle preseason football now, where a lot of it is based on who do you play with, who's not playing, who's not on the field. We don't have as much to actually sink our teeth into. But when they played Albert O so deep into that previous preseason game, I don't see how you could do anything but react to that and take him down a few slots, which I did. And so it's just funny that Albert O gets a little bit of a bounce back this week by not playing, right? It shows a little bit of a commitment to him. And I still think Dulcich is like a long-term thing. I'd be surprised if he had a significant role in his first year. So what's the hash of this? Albert O's on my new rankings. He's going to be somewhere in like the tight end 16 to 19 range. You can see the upside for him. He's not a priority for me. If I don't get him, I can live with it. But at least I still, all the reasons I liked him a month ago, I think they're more in play now that the Broncos maybe seem to like him more than they did a week ago. I mean, again, we have to react to sometimes how they use guys, not just what they actually do for production. And that's been the case of Albert O.
Yeah, I think just that quote too from Nathaniel Hackett kind of got a little misinterpreted, like that he needed reps. Sometimes you just want to see a guy out there actually playing close to real football. I mean, it's preseason, but it still makes sense that a new coaching staff would want to see him actually get some game action. And, you know, he's like all these tight ends, younger guys are developmental guys in some respects. So it made sense that they wanted to get him out there. And I'm glad you brought up Greg Dulcich, because there's been, you know, some folks in the Twitterverse, like they're big Greg Dulcich fans, and they take this Albert O news as like, oh, this could be Dulcich. Dulcich hasn't played in any of the preseason games. Like, he's had a long-term hamstring injury, and like they're kind of hopeful that he's going to be out there for week one, but they're not even banking that Dulcich is going to play early on this year. So I agree with you, more of a long-term bet. And I don't want to, like, I never tanked Albert O in my rankings, but I'm comfortable. Wait, would you rather have Albert O or Cole Kmet? I feel like it's Cole Kmet at this point.
It has to be Cole Kmet. And before we close the door on the Broncos, I just want to just say out loud something that I changed my mind on, or something I've kind of made more of a sharp point into. I had Cortland Sutton and Jerry Jeudy very close in ranking maybe a few weeks ago. I've now gotten to the point where I think Sutton is clearly a round or a round and a half preferred to Jeudy. I don't dislike Jeudy, but I'm expecting Sutton to be the lead singer in this passing game.
Me too. I've got him a tier. I do have him tier four, Cortland Sutton, tier five for Jerry Jeudy. Like, I would be, I'd be maybe 5%, 10% shocked if Jerry Jeudy just ends up being better, but I don't think you can project that way at this point, because we've seen a peak season on Cortland Sutton's resume. We haven't seen a peak season from Jerry Jeudy yet, but I will say, talk about a narrow target tree, man. Like, this has suddenly gone from a group where, like, they're hoping KJ Hamler can play a role. We'll see what Albert O will do. Tim Patrick is out of the mix here. Like, there's a chance, at least for the first month of the season, before Hamler gets really ramped up, before Albert O gets fully integrated, that, like, Jerry Jeudy and Cortland Sutton are kind of like a diet version of DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, where these two guys are dominating the target tree. I think that's actually, like, on the table now, where I would have said there's no chance that would happen prior to the Tim Patrick injury.
And Sutton also, the major injury is far enough away in his rearview mirror that we can think of it finally back to 100% Cortland Sutton, which I don't think we ever saw last year.
No, oh, absolutely not. He was one of the most disappointing players for me last year, just like going back and charting him for RP. And I think a lot of it was coming back from that injury. So I'm feeling pretty good about Cortland Sutton at this point. I green light Cortland Sutton for sure. And I guess I'm yellow light on Jerry Jeudy, where he just goes in a range where I like a lot of the players there. We talked about him, their second year receivers, Ayuk, Gabe Davis, all those guys. So
Bateman.
Bateman, baby. Love Rashad Bateman. All right, let's talk Dallas Cowboys here. This team, weird offseason, man. You know, they trade Amari Cooper, which at the time I was like, okay, I totally understand it. You're trying to get some salary relief. He's an overrated player. But they get a fifth round pick back for Amari Cooper and salary cap room that they're just kind of sitting on now. And they totally misread the receiver market because it proceeded to explode after that. Like, if they had held on to Amari Cooper, I think, a little longer, they might have gotten a bit better of a return, although I'm not 100% convinced of that. You know, they lose Tyron Smith, man, and I think we can jump into the Cowboys preview with the Tyron Smith thing because, you know, I think you said this about the Saints offensive line recently. Like, there's not a ton of offensive lines that, like, really move the mark a ton in fantasy, but the Cowboys used to be a great line, and now our friend Brandon Thorne from Establish the Run said that they went from 6th to 20th in his rankings just because they lost Tyron Smith. That is a pretty big deal, I think, when you're trying to trickle the effect down for this offense in fantasy. That's where it gets a little tougher. I did swap Dak Prescott and Trey Lance in my quarterback rankings, but that was the only real change I made as a result of this.
Yeah, I'm probably going to move Prescott down too. You know, very quietly, the Cowboys led the NFL in scoring last year. And I realized that part of that was a defense that generated a lot of takeaways. Part of it was a really easy schedule. Of course, the Cowboys still managed to be a general disappointment. I mean, if you'd missed the whole NFL season, I told you, oh, the Cowboys led the league in scoring. You'd be like, oh, did CeeDee Lamb go bonkers? Well, not quite. Well, was it a great yeah. Zeke year? Not exactly. Well, Dak win MVP or something? No, not even close to it. You know, can I interest
you? He didn't
even
win comeback player of the year, and he was like ticketed for comeback player of the year.
Right, right. But the Cowboys, they're a unique team because of the Jerry Jones experience. And what are they going to do with Zeke and Pollard? Are you a Zeke sympathizer? He was hurt last year. He's going to be fine. They're going to play to the contract. Or it's like, no, look at Pollard's efficiency. And how does that all shake down? I mean, man, talk about Thorne moving down the Cowboys from number 6 to number 20 in offensive line rankings. That's significant. And because there's just no, when you lose your stud left tackle, it's not like, okay, well, let's just go to the stud left tackle store and get another one. You know, it doesn't work that way. There's no tree where they fall off, you know, and you just plug another guy in. And I was already out on Zeke. It just makes me more out on Zeke. The problem with Pollard is that I find myself in every room ready to get myself some Tony Pollard, and then somebody else wants him a little bit more than I do. And I'm not taking, like you talked about Edmonds and Pollard. I would always take Edmonds over Pollard because Edmonds is going to be valuable right now, where Pollard is a wait and see. I don't know if there's a way. We know this receiver room is really thin after CeeDee Lamb. I think everybody loves, I certainly love him. I'm trying to get some CeeDee Lamb if I can, but I wonder if a lot of times people talk about, Justin Herzog always says established running. He's like, oh, when they talk about the running backs playing at the same time or the running back getting used more in the passing game, you throw that stuff out. It's right up there with best shape of his life. It's just a cute little puff piece for the summer. It doesn't mean anything. I look at Mike McCarthy, who was probably puffed up by Aaron Rodgers. And, you know, he seems like a perfect Dallas coach where he's got enough name value that you can hire him, but he's got the right personality to kind of do what Jerry wants.
Yeah. Yes, man.
Right. He's a yes, man. That's well said. So ultimately, this is a team I can't be proactive. I'll be proactive on Lamb. I'll be proactive on Dalton Schultz because I think he's the clear number two target, but he's shielded by Lamb. Now, my friend Mike Salfino made the point that, well, with the offensive line being in kind of disarray right now, maybe that means that Schultz needs to block more. Maybe it means a different tight end comes into play. I can see that point, but I still think at the end of the day, the second most targeted player on this team is going to be Schultz by a wide margin, and yet he'll never be the priority defense option off the bus. So I think Schultz is a decent tight end in a pocket I'm willing to invest in. So green light on Lamb, green light on Schultz. Other than that, because Pollard's a little too pricey, because Zeke's in a point of his career arc, I'm really nervous, because Dak just lost his left tackle and I hate his receiver room after Lamb. These are a lot of guys I'm not going to draft.
Yeah. The Tyron Smith injury, like last year, Terrence Steele was their swing tackle, but now he's the starting right tackle because they dumped Lyle Collins, again, a guy that I think they sort of like, they wanted to save money on Lyle Collins, who's not like, Lyle Collins is not great, like he's not one of the five best tackles in the league or something, but he's a perfectly good and reasonable starter that they just got rid of for salary cap room, and they're sitting on like $30 million in salary cap room for nothing. I mean, they got to pay a Zeke's contract, we know that. Jerry Jones out there on First Take saying we go as Zeke goes, which, whatever, Jerry. Like, okay.
He's going to die on that hill, man. And it's so, yeah. You would think this has been so much stuff built in that the running game, it's important, but it doesn't drive an offense. It doesn't matter who you have. It doesn't matter if you have Derrick Henry or Christian McCaffrey. Passing is so much more important. Now, you want to run assault away games and you want to control the clock, and it's good to have options on offense. But until Jerry Jones, and I guess this is never going to happen, until he's willing to let somebody who knows more about football run the team, the Cowboys are always going to be this spectacle. and this big stadium and these great helmets and this great branding and everything. And they're going to be the classic underachievers, man. They're going to be the, you know, the person who they come to school and they're the smartest kid in the world, but they don't study, they don't do their homework. And, you know, they did great in the SATs, but you know, they wind up going to like community college.
Yeah. I mean, you're not wrong. That's kind of how the last few years has been for Dallas. I don't know, man. I do think what's interesting about this team this year for fantasy is they not only led the NFL in scoring last year, they have thrown the hell out of the ball the last 2 years. Like under Mike McCarthy, Kellen Moore calling plays, they have thrown the ball a lot. So for a guy like CeeDee Lamb, I think he's the one absolute green light pick for me. Like if you can get CeeDee Lamb in the early second round, do it. I think he is gonna smash this year. I think he is that good. And you know, him going into that vacated Amari Cooper flanker role is gonna be great news for him. And then you just look at Dalton Schultz is a good name to call out, because this offensive line, if it's not pass protecting well, like he's gonna get those bunny hop passes. He's not like a down the field tight end. He's kind of like a short area catch and fall type of guy, like sort of this generation Zach Ertz in a little bit of way. The running backs, so you're kind of, it seems like you are, would you say yellow light or red light with both of these guys?
Red on Zeke, yellow on Pollard, because I would still, if I could just get a little bit of the ADP I'm looking for in Pollard, I'd certainly take him.
I think I'm green light on, I think I'm yellow. Actually, I think I'm yellow on both guys. I'm not like going out of my way for both of them, but I do kind of buy into the narrative that Zeke was really injured last year. Now I don't want to talk out of both sides of my mouth, because I've said, like with Saquon Barkley, like how many times do we see a guy start to fade and then suddenly come back up? And that's kind of the way Zeke has been trending. But I think most of that is like priced into his ADP at this point. So especially in sharper leagues, like he's going to go in the fourth round. Like if you can get Zeke in the fourth, fifth round, you got to do it. And then Tony Pollard, I know that you're right to say, and Salfino said this about the running backs don't coexist at the same time usually. However, I will say, like, they're going to need Tony Pollard to sort of play like a early career Austin Eckler role, right? Like, I think that, and you look at that, one of those first seasons with them, I talked about this with Frank Schwab, like Melvin Gordon had 1,300 yards from scrimmage. Austin Eckler had 9 yards from scrimmage. Melvin Gordon scored a ton of touchdowns. Like, in a best case scenario, I think that's possible for these two running backs.
Yeah, I think it was actually Justin Herzig who made the point about the running backs. It was Selfie who was talking about the Dallas offensive line. I just want to clean that up. But you know, the other thing with Pollard is that I'm just not confident he can have standalone value if Zeke doesn't get hurt or Zeke isn't, you know, marginalized in some way. And I don't think they're ever going to do that. Zeke, the best case for drafting Zeke in my mind is that you know that the floor is there for touches. They're going to prioritize him there. But again, he just lost his left tackle. And this is the point I keep making for Alvin Kamara. This is the worst offensive line Zeke's ever run behind. That's by far. Like
by a country mile.
By far. So, Zeke, and I understand you see him in the fourth round and it looks awfully tempting. You talked about Barkley having a couple of years off and off years and stuff like that. That goes back to my cheese theory that once the cheese goes bad on a player, which I would say like two bad years in a row and, you know, injuries and you get into age pocket, we worry about that. To me is like the cheese goes bad and you don't bet on the cheese going good again, because it's so easy to look back with the right kind of eye and say, oh, but this guy was so great for me. And Michael Thomas was the number one receiver for me. And I won my league because I drafted Zeke his rookie year. And I think windows in the NFL are very, very short. They're very small. They're very narrow. And I just go younger. Draft somebody younger. That's my advice to you.
Fair. I'd rather have like Javonte Williams than Zeke this
for
year.
Sure.
That's for sure.
Well, it's like when I look at Javonte and Melvin Gordon, and we know that, look, they're not going to kick Gordon to the curb and everything, but Williams is 7 years younger at running back. That's a gigantic age difference. We can't overlook that. And if you draft Williams, I only see two cases with Williams. I know this is a Cowboys preview, but I only see Williams is an important guy to talk about. So let's just give it a second. I think Williams is either going to be very good and maybe a little bit underused, or he's going to be awesome and you're going to be so glad you had him. And I think either one of those is a win for you. Is, you know, one of them you make a par and one of them you make a birdie. I'm totally in. If I were, you know, Schwab and I are doing a couple of teams together and we're still figuring out who we like and who we don't like. And you know, like he likes Trey Lance more than me. I may ultimately just give on that because I like Frank and he's right a lot, awful lot. And maybe he just gets that right. But I think we're both in on Williams, man. I think we're going to have Williams on some teams. I want you, dear listener, to have some Javonte Williams in your life this spring or this fall, I guess.
I think Josh Norris, at the beginning of when we relaunched the podcast in this new format, I had him on as a guest, and he said it really well. Like, Javonte is pretty much like, you might take a small loss with him, but not a huge loss at his ADP, but you have a huge, massive gain potential at his ADP.
It's coming. So it is coming for Javonte Williams. You might be a year early on it, and it might drive you crazy if you take him proactively this year, and next year is the year where it really sung, but man,
it's coming.
And I get it. Look, he didn't play full-time at UNC, but that's partially because Michael Carter's a good player too.
Yep, Michael Carter's out there like taking snaps away from Breece Hall this year. Last thing on the Cowboys here before we wrap it up. We talked about all the mainline players, and it is kind of a top-heavy roster. Any interest in any kind of, like, sleepers here? Update on the receiver core. Jalen Tolbert, who's, like, a prospect I like, but people were acting as if, like, he was going to walk into the number two receiver job on this team. He, I think, is going to kind of rotate in as the third receiver. Like, Noah Brown seems like he's going to be the Michael Gallup replacement at X receiver until Michael Gallup gets back. And you, Scott, as a non-injury optimist, have to love, like, Michael Gallup laughing off the idea that they asked him, like, you're going to be ready for week one? And he literally laughed, like, at the reporters, like, no, I'm not going to be ready for no week one. He's another guy that might, like, Jerry says they're not putting him on the PUP. Okay, he's the guy that I bet, I wouldn't be surprised if he gets IR'd after roster cutdowns just to miss those 3 weeks. So any interest in Jalen, I don't think we're drafting Noah Brown, who's like a blocker, but Tolbert is a guy I took in the last round of this draft on Friday, but I might cut him for a kicker, but, you know, before the season starts.
I have a really easy answer for this. No, I'm not drafting. No. I don't have a sleeper on the Cowboys. And if you beat me with Jalen Tolbert, I can sleep at night.
Well, that's all we're pretty much hoping for, listeners, is that you can listen to this podcast, you can play fantasy this year, and you can sleep at night. That's pretty much all we're looking for.
So, during the day, if you're lucky enough to take naps, you know, you're a night watchman or something like that, you know, I'm fine with that too.
Yeah, whatever you need to do, just get that rest in. Because, man, the season is coming. This is going to be a big year, man. 2022, it's going to be a fun football season. I can't wait for it to get rolling. For now, that's going to do it for us. You can follow Scott on Twitter at Scott_Pianowski. You can follow me on Twitter at Matt_BYB. And while you're there, please check out all the great content by following at Yahoo Fantasy. Please leave us a 5-star rating on whatever podcast platform that you're listening to this on. If you don't like it, don't leave a review. Just tweet at me privately about how much you hate me, and I'll live with that. Tomorrow...
Yes, tweet at Matt.
Yeah. Tomorrow, Andy Behrens and I will tell you how to avoid some common draft mistakes when you're forming your teams this year. Until then, we're out.